I'm Christine Dean, and this is Live from Studio A. And joining us today, a guy who hasn't been here for quite some time, and last time he was here by himself, and this time he brought a crew with him. It's Mike Mangione and the Union. Welcome, Mike. I think it's been like 7 years or something since you were here in the studio.
Yeah, it's been a long time, and it really is good to be back. I used to come here often, as I was telling the band, and I kind of missed it. We haven't been to Duluth, and we started coming back recently, but it's been kind of a long time since we've been here. So it's good to be back. It's so pretty and so close to, like, you know, I live in Wisconsin, so this is a no-brainer.
You guys are based in Milwaukee, right?
Yeah, half's in Milwaukee. The other half lives in Chicago.
Okay.
So kind of split the two cities.
Which is where you and your brother Tom, who's also here today, are you originally from the Chicago area?
Yeah,
is that
we're
right?
We're actually all from that area. And I met the string players and the drummer in Wisconsin just by chance. And it's kind of a weird way we came together. But they kind of just fell into my world and stuck with me.
And you have four people with you today, or there's four of you here today. Is it normally a six-piece?
Six-piece,
right?
Yeah. Okay. And we often travel as a four-piece because it's easier, and we don't have to deal with the other two personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And usually six-piece, upright bass, drum kit, violin, cello, electric, and acoustic.
And do you want to? So we have you, Mike Mangione, and Tom Mangione here. You want to introduce the rest of the band?
Yeah, Tom Mangione, my brother, plays guitar, and on the cello is Patrick Hochter. He plays cello. And on the violin is Christina Priceman. She plays violin.
All right, let's hear a tune, and then we'll come back and chat a little bit more. What do you want to kick off with here?
Sure, we'll do. We have an album coming out September 3rd, and this is the leadoff track on the album, and it's called Fields of Evermore.
Shadow lit by the moon, and heavy is the burden that comes too soon. The fields are hot and heavy and filled with stone. I'm gonna work the land of my father until a seed has been sown. My heart from pain. When the bundle falls, we burn them all till we find that evil day. My cracked hand holds the rhythm. I walk a furrow with an offering. I can't wash my hands too off them boards on account of that burn and sting. I'm gonna make it rain somehow. I'm gonna make rain somehow on the field of evermore mercy. Hold me now and get behind the plow. Mercy, hold me now. You get behind the plow. Mercy, mercy, hold on. You get behind those fields of evermore. I say. Hold me now, get behind the plow. Mercy. Hold me now, get behind the plow. Mercy, mercy, hold on. Get behind, We get behind. We get behind.
Mike Mangione and the Union, live from Studio A. And you said that's one from a forthcoming album?
Yeah, it's an album we did recently, and it's being released in September. So we've kind of had it with us for a while, but it took a while to officially release it. So, but we're excited about it. We did it with Bo Ramsey, out of Iowa City. And
Yes, he's been here many a time.
I'm sure.
Greg Brown comes to town a lot, and he's always with Greg. He's always with Pieta when she's here.
Yeah, he's kind of that guy that is in the back but is so upfront with his sound and just so influential in this area. So, it was amazing to work with him, and he helped us a lot with making this record. He really has a mark on it. So we're excited to share it with the world for sure.
He really is one of the coolest cats around.
Telling everybody, yeah. I mean, he's the only guy that can wear sunglasses and a hat with a cigarette in his mouth indoors and not be looked that strange. It's just an extension of him, you know.
And he's played with Lucinda Williams and just so many people, and added he has such a distinctive guitar sound. So how did you end up working with him? And now you have this album, Red Wing Blackbird Man. This one's already out though, right?
That's the one that's not out yet.
Oh, it's not out yet.
That's coming out in September. So
okay,
but yeah, we played with Pieta and Bo in Iowa City. And when I was thinking about producers, we had worked with a great producer in Lexington for a couple of years, but I just kind of wanted to try something new. We all wanted to try something new. And when I thought about Bo, I realized this man is like, he's just a tone aficionado with guitar. He just understands tone. And he plays kind of in an ethereal way. And that's how I look at my brother as well on guitar. He's all about tone and being ethereal and painting rather than playing. And then also at the same time, Bo understands acoustics so well just from Greg and Pieta. So I said, well, he would be a great person to work with. And so I just reached out to him, and he was all about coming together. And it was, you talk about his pedigree, that was not only like making the record was amazing, but just listening to that guy tell story. He like just slip into these stories. I kind of felt like the guy like in Wayne's World when the roadie would just kind of slip into these stories, or like working with Ozzy Osbourne or something, and just kind of like mesmerized by him talking about like Dylan and Mark Knopfler. And you're like, oh man, you're cool. I want to be behind those shades someday.
Well, you're one step closer just by getting to work with them. But this album's kind of been in the works for a while then, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it took a while to find the right publicist. And, we do everything independently. So, money kind of is slow to build up. And finding the right person that we travel all the time, and we're always working. But it's you have to sell that, and you have to sell your qualities to people to work with you, and it just takes time sometimes when you don't have a big label knocking the door for you. So,
and that kind of conflicts with the creative side, because you've got this work that probably wrote a while ago and maybe recorded a while ago,
it's all start stop.
Yeah,
from writing to really making albums and releasing them, it's just this switching of hats constantly, which I think is good because it keeps you aware of what's going on. But sometimes I think something suffer, like having an album unreleased for over a year. It's kind of painful.
And then you're probably working on new material that you're anxious to get out there. And
totally, yeah.
Well, so since it's been such a while since you've been here, and I think that you were doing maybe, you and Tom, your brother, have worked together for a long time, right?
Yeah, probably since birth. I used to steal his toys, used to share stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you were growing up, what was the music situation like?
Well, I played.
Did you help each other discover different music, or
no?
Were you into different things? Or?
It wasn't to help discover music. It was I just stole his music. I'm the younger, so I play drums, and we used to go in the basement all the time, and he'd play guitar, and I'd play drums, and it was actually kind of similar to like the White Stripes just bang in and out. That's pretty much what it was. But we'd play like only Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix, and U2 songs, I think. But yeah, I mean, all the music that came to my ears was whatever he was listening to.
But not when we got older. I mean, you definitely reciprocated.
Yeah, I turned you on to some cool stuff like Fine Young Cannibals.
Yes.
And
Pet Shop Boys.
Pet Shop Boys.
You know, I hear a little bit of that in your work. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
Who's never mind. All right.
Well, and that's a time-honored tradition of the older siblings kind of influencing the younger ones as you're growing up and having...
And that's actually... Tom and I both play lefty guitar upside down.
That's right.
That's because I learned from this guy, and this guy learned from a blind man, literally. So
who did not know that you were... I think many years ago we heard that story here in the studios that the teacher did not know how he you were playing the guitar, and by the time you found out, it was too late to change what you were doing. You'd already been doing it for a few months, and that's how you were going to play the guitar. Yeah.
He's like, I got knocking at heaven's door down, man. I can't turn back.
So do people look at you funny, like guitar players kind of say, what are you doing there?
You know, a little bit, and our drummer's a lefty as well. So out of a six-piece band, half the band's lefty. So it really, if there's a picture, it looks like a negative's been flipped. It just looks ridiculous.
I can see that. People would think, oh, we got this backwards.
Whoops, yeah.
So. But so you guys have been, when did you start making music together?
Making music together. Tom, when was that? 2000, like first album? Yeah, 2004. I wouldn't say what we were doing in the beginning was making music per se. It was playing instruments.
And we made swans die, essentially.
You made swans die?
Yeah.
And doves
swan
sing?
Song. No, oh, sorry.
Okay. Doves cry or something like that? Is that? No? All right. Okay. Do you want a microphone?
No.
No, we started, our first album was in 2005, but we were always kind of toying around with stuff. We had like two songs growing up. For a good like 10 years that we just played over and over again that we wrote,
and one of them was a swear word, so we won't say it.
Yeah,
it was our punk rock days.
Yeah, it was really good. We can play it. No,
Mike, the whole entire lyric is that one swear word.
Well,
letter word.
We had an edited a radio version. Yeah,
bleep. Was it called bleep?
No, it was love you or something like that. Whatever. We don't, you know what, just don't worry about it.
You know what's impressing me about all this, though, is you guys grew up together, and you've obviously worked together for a long time, and you still seem to get along quite well and enjoy each other's company here, so.
Yeah, I think Tom's scared of me, like, extremely, and so he just keeps at bay.
I'm not going to say anything, Mike.
You better not. Don't you talk back to me. Don't you bet.
But okay, so we're going to get back to I think I had a point in there somewhere, which was, so the two of you have been working together for quite some time, and you were, you know, touring a lot, doing solo stuff. Mm-hmm. And at what point did you get a band involved?
So I would play by myself constantly, and I was telling these guys, I used to play Fitgers all the time, and Pizza Luce, and Beaners, and I used to, and Sir Ben's, wasn't that a place? Mm-hmm. As well, I used to play all those places, and I was telling them, I used to go to the garage at Fitgers that's attached to the Fitgers Mall or whatever, and I used to park on the top level, which is completely open, overlooking the lake, and that's where I used to stay. I used to sleep in my van there, so that was like my little apartment. And so those were like crazy times, but really, really just learning how to be a musician, but also realizing that what I was doing wasn't really what was playing in my head. You know, I kind of had a vision, and I wasn't doing it physically, so... Started adding these people, added Tom, and then in like 2004, and then added Patrick in 2007.
Six.
Tina right then as well, and just slowly started building this band. I didn't really know I wanted to have these guys until I heard them play, and then I like fell in love with their sound and asked if they wanted to join a band, and it's been 7 years now, so they haven't left yet, or they haven't been able to leave yet, but they might run away eventually.
And they're scared of you also?
Yeah. I'm looking right at you, Patrick.
And how many have you done more than this album with the band then, I'm going to assume?
Yeah, so we did in 2007, 2008, we did Tenebrae. 2009, 2010, we did Offering. And then this is, what year is it? 13? 2013? Red Wing Blackbird Man.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. How has your songwriting evolved in that time, and is having a band that must really change things for, you know, when you're thinking about a song.
Yeah.
And you're not going to have to just go sell it yourself on stage. You've got a band to go with it. How does that change
things? I would say the biggest transition from that period of realizing what I was playing was not what was in my head was just relaxing on the amount that I played. I was just strumming the heck out of a guitar and singing like really loud to try to win audiences over and loud bars and stuff. And adding a band just allowed me to take a step back and rest in other people and let other sounds kind of carry the weight of the music. And I didn't have to yell so much. It was right around the time too that like Sufjan Stevens was coming out, and so the kind of the whisper songwriter was becoming big, and so it's perfect. I was able to kind of ride those coattails and sink back into the music a little more. But then as far as writing goes, is over time getting to know these people, you know their color of their instrument, you know like what color they make, and so when you write, you kind of write with the intention of adding their color in eventually down, you know, when that time comes. So you kind of write with them in mind, and it's been fun. It's like having a bigger palette of colors, if you will, that you can make a picture with.
So how much closer is it to what you hear in your head when you're doing it?
You know, I hope this doesn't sound weird, but I think it's created now what I hear in my head. It surpassed it because I didn't go for it. It kind of found me. I know I needed something. I wanted something that had a vibe to it, and I established that, but their independent colors kind of recreated the picture for me of what it was going to be. So, yeah, I think that makes sense.
That must feel pretty good.
Sometimes. It'd feel a lot better if we made money, but...
Word. All right, let's hear another tune. What do you guys want to do next?
We're going to do one called Weather and Stone, and this is just the little three-piece violin, cello, and acoustic.
I think it's three.
Is it three? Mm-hmm.
Weather and stone, we reach for protection. Weather and stone, an echo of rejection. Weather and stone, let your water my mind won't make me wanna feel. Weather and stone, every prophet needs protection. Weather and stone, rock hollow by the water's direction. Weather and stone, my mind will make me tear the scene. I wanna be someone, leave this town, dust on an open road, float above the ground, where the flowing water is bound, and the singer's song sound. My hands are falling down, with the cares I throw around. Fire and stone, burn me in the trouble I've grown. Fire and stone, wind my flesh round the truth of the bone. Fire and stone, purify the death I've grown. My mind will make me run back home. I want to love someone, want to hear my name. that city limit line. Only words remain, but someone else must feel the same. And a touch will cure the pain. Lips that set my chest aflame to burn this heart of shame. I have no one but myself to blame for the weed that choked the grain. We'll surrender before that weather's aim, and with the rock it will reclaim.
That is Mike Mangione and the Union, live from Studio A, and a song called Weather and Stone, and that's from their forthcoming album, Red-Winged Blackbird Man. Tell me about that song, Mike. Where did that one come from?
Oh, man. A friend of mine was going through a really hard time for himself personally and in his profession, and he was kind of getting a lot of stones cast towards him, So I just kind of got my mind bubbling a little bit. But it's not specifically about that. That just kind of started the process. It's more of like a reflection on emotion and where you are and where you're going to go. And, you know, the imagery of a weather and stone being stone, the hardest thing we could think, you know. One of the hardest things out there is transitioned permanently over time with weather and water, and just how even the hardest things in our life can be transformed by the simplest things. And so it's kind of a collection of thoughts. I don't really know. Can't really put my finger on it. What's that, Tom?
You know, if I may add, this is Tom, the guitarist, and I don't play on that. And I mean, to add to, you know, describing the meaning of that song, it means something for me as well, because I heard it the first time all together in the control room when they recorded it. And it was the three of them sitting together, you know, one take, all live. And I was in there with the drummer, Nez. And by the end of it, we were like teary and misty and everything. It was really like an awesome experience, you know, because we could witness it objectively, because we're not playing it and we're not trying to remember our parts or whatever. So it really was a powerful song, and it's definitely become my favorite song on the album. And I always have to convince Mike to do it. I don't know why, because it seems you know, it's obviously the best one in my mind.
Mike, are you worried that maybe it's a little too subdued, or what's?
It needs the right temperature to play. You know, you need to have the right canvas to put it on, and I don't mean that like a. My work is so important, but what's the point of playing a song if it's just going to, you know, fall on deaf ears? You kind of have to have the room set.
That's a great point, but it seems that even when we go to listening rooms, that's not always on the list. And I think we're a very dynamic band. We use dynamics as sort of like the seventh instrument, if you will. And that one really sets. It's the most intimate song, and it's, you know, the lowest point on the dynamic spectrum. And I think it really, you know, the lower your lows are, the higher your highs, you know, seem.
Yeah. You know, but a very honest answer would be also, I've just become comfortable with the lyrics. So there's a time where I just get stuff confused. I'm always confused. My lyrics are always changing and being rewritten, but that one for sure. So we'll play it more often, Tom.
You'll get the lyrics down. Then you get the lyrics down.
I got it.
How do you go about reading a room, you know, when you're deciding what you're going to play? You play like a wide variety of types of places?
Yeah, we play a lot of different kinds of places. You know, reading a room, I'd say we always try to, not to get too whimsical here, but we always try to create communion on stage, and then communion with the audience, just like a communion, common union, like have a union with everybody. And by that I mean We give the music, they give their ears and their hearts, they open their hearts up, we give back, and we just feed. It becomes like this cyclical relationship. And that relationship as performers, like I said, first it happens on stage, and then it happens, it goes out to the audience and comes back. That relationship all gets diagnosed, we read that all within like the first song. You just kind of know, and you feel it. It's just a vibe you get from, it's an energy, not to get like new agey, but like it's an energy that you just feel in the room. And energy can be silent. It is silent, but it can be like this incredible like heartbeat silent energy that you feel, and you're like, okay, I think we can do this one. I think we can pull off this song. Or sometimes I'm kind of losing some things here. I think we should throw in this louder, you know, ruckus one and shake it up a bit. You know, you kind of ride with the room.
Okay.
So it's important, man. I mean, the room changes everything. It's like there's that story of the violinist Joshua Bell, who played in the subway, and only like little children, he's a violin, you know, just standing there playing his violin. Only little children would watch him, and parents would be pulling their kids, and everybody's walking by him. I think he made like $50 in 4 hours, and the next day he was playing Carnegie Hall for like thousands of dollars. And it's all about the canvas, like what you put your work on that makes the difference, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, what is the room telling you to finish up with here? What song would be appropriate?
We talked about this, and we're actually gonna do a song, a special song today. It's Levon Helm's 1 year anniversary of his death. So we're gonna play a song called "Got Me a Woman" that he didn't write, but he recorded for Dirt Farmer that came out a couple years ago. And so we're gonna do one for Levon. And the room agrees right now.
Oh, I got me a woman, she's a pretty fine woman at that. We'll live with a monkey and a Chinese acrobat. She calls me Dex, makes me wear a cowboy hat. I don't mind, she's the best little woman at that. Nothing I could do could ever make me treat the woman mean. She trims my beard and she keeps my tractor clean. She burns my bread, makes me eat turnip greens, yeah. A woman like that, a boy don't gotta be mean, no. Some folks to move out to California, some folks stay in Tennessee, yeah. I don't mind where I'm headed, just as long as that woman stands by me. Rather do than spend my nights at home. I've been talking with the baby and playing on the slide trombone. She talks and talks, she really turns me on. Yeah, with a woman like that, a boy don't got to roam. Oh. Some folks they move out to California. As long as that woman stands by me, yeah, I said, just as long as that woman stands by me. one more time, just as long as that woman stands by me.
That is Mike Mangione and The Union. Well, thank you so much, guys.
It's great to be back here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Today's Live from Studio A was produced by me, Christine Dean, with help from Justin Bergman, with funding provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, with additional support provided by The Playlist, Thursday nights at 9 on PBS North on WDSE, WRPT. To check out upcoming guests or to listen to previous sessions, go to KUMD.org and click on Arts. This is Live from Studio A on 103.3 KUMD. Thanks for listening.